Welcome to this week's Bromsgrove and Droitwich Standard podcast with me, Tristan Harris. Now, with me today, I have Neil Edwards from Bromsgrove's Blue Cross. Good morning.
Good morning, Tris. How are you?
I'm all good. Now, it's quite fortunate, isn't it, that your centre's closed today and our podcasts are recorded on a Wednesday.
So. It is, yeah. Closed to the public, but the staff's still working hard, so I've left them there with the animals.
That's all good. I'm sure they're in safe hands. Now, the reason we've got you in is because on May the 28th, you celebrated your 45th anniversary with the Blue Cross. That's incredible.
I know. It doesn't seem like it. You know, people have been asking me the last sort of couple of weeks, how does it feel? And I said, well, you know, I can't really explain because it's just like another day for me. It hasn't really changed over the 45 years in a sense. You know, it's just a job and I enjoy it and it's great.
Now, you've been at Bromsgrove at the beginning because the 45 years obviously spans a number of different places. So do you want to tell us a little bit about how it all began? Because were you an animal-loving child who just really wanted to work with animals all your life?
Strangely, no. We never had an animal as a pet. My father didn't like animals very much, so it was quite strange. So when I was about sort of 13, 14, I was deciding what to do. And I went to the careers master at school and he was saying, like, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I want like to work with animals. He looked at me and said, oh, crazy, you never get into animals, it's now dead. It was like it's all girls work, you know, never men into working with animals. So I went away and wrote to loads of places, RSPCA and all the other sort of places, and Blue Cross were the only organization that wrote back and said, you know, yes, we're interested, you know, we'd like to come and have a tour of the hospital in London, have a chat, and started from there really.
And what, the guy should be given an award, or the woman should be given an award for that letter, because that's obviously led to 45 years, fantastic service.
Yeah, it's Bill Brooks, and he was sort of my mentor at the time as well, because he said, like, you know, if you come along before you leave school, come up at weekends and school holidays, see how you like, you know, working with animals and doing the jobs, and we'll see how it goes. And I enjoyed it so much. He said, like, you can start, obviously, when you leave school. And he said to me, the best bit of advice he gave me was, you know, he said, you know, if you want to start in this job and work up in management, you need to be able to do all the jobs. So when you're actually asking someone to do something, they know that you've done it yourself, and obviously helps. That's a good bit of management there.
So give us an example of some of the skills you've got and what you do with the animals.
Yeah, I started off in the hospital, so I did a bit of nursing. I didn't actually have the qualifications, but I used to sort of do nursing with the vets, so I'd be assisting them with operations and that sort of thing. And I did night work as well, so I was responsible for the hospital on my own from 8 o'clock at night to 8 in the morning. So we'd have people come in with animals that are injured, ill, poorly. So I'd have to diagnose what was wrong with them, give them injections, do x-rays, call the vet in, and then we do operations, you know, through the night as well for that. Then I moved on to doing van driving, so I was going around London picking animals up that were injured and poorly, bringing them back to the hospital.
You were basically like an animal paramedic, weren't you, in an ambulance?
Yeah, it was amazing in them days because, you know, we used to go around, you never know what we were going to find, you know, we used to pick up little old ladies, cats and dogs, bring them back to the hospital, have them treated and take them home again. And then we would get calls for animals that had been knocked over. So we'd go off and find animals, you know, that had been, unfortunately, knocked over in road traffic accidents. We'd have to do first aid on the side of the road and then rush them back to the hospital.
And I suppose it's like any job of this kind, really. I bet you do become attached. That must be the hardest thing, to not become attached to the animals at the end of the day, because obviously you've got a job to do, but you're only human, aren't you? And if you're an animal lover, it's like...
Yeah, you get attached to them. I mean, over the years, you know, I've had sort of obviously lots of cats and dogs in my life, but I think all the animals that I've met, you know, they've all been part of my life as well. You know, any animal that comes into the centre and gets rehomed again, you know, you're touched by it, you know, So we've got a story, they've all got a history to them, so yeah, we are touched by them.
And you're probably going to be like a parent now, because I spend my life trying to tell my daughters that I haven't got a favourite, but have you had a favourite pet over the years that you really just, you know, sticks in your mind?
I think they've all got favourites for various reasons. I mean, we've got one at the moment, you know, we've had since last August, is the three-legged Jack Russell. You know, he's quite a terrier, you know, he'd been brought into our centre in Lugner, then transferred to us. And he had an operation to try and repair his broken leg, but they couldn't do it, so they had to amputate it. You know, and he's a character. You know, he's a little terrier. He's into everything. You know, which is fantastic. We've had cats that have lived to sort of 20 years old. You know, so I think they've all got their own little stories.
Now, one of the things that I remember, you just reminded me with Jack Russell, because when we do your Christmas campaign every year to give food and treats to the pets, and when we were in Bromsgrove in the office, this guy used to come in, and he used to have this lovely Jack Russell. And we hadn't got time to set up a photo, so we had your Christmas bin that our receptionist had created, and it had tinsel around it, and it had the Blue Cross sign on it. And we said to this guy, "Can we just borrow your dog?" And we had him looking out of the bin, and he had like those puppy sad eyes. And it caused you a bit of a problem, actually, because apparently all your staff were getting calls going, "Oh, we want to rehouse that dog on the front of the Standard." And they were like, "He's not even from here." So he was just there.
I mean, we've been well supported, Blue Cross, you know, as an organisation, obviously by a year across the years. I know when we started the Christmas Appeal, and that we were almost as successful as obviously the children's charities, you know, and it's hard when there's so many charities out there. You know, obviously Christmas wanting donations, especially children's charities. So we did feel a little bit guilty about, you know, obviously all the gifts we were getting, but, you know, the animals need it just as much as the children as well.
Well, you say that, but there's like Clenthill Vets. I got a phone call yesterday because we did the story about their first aid course. And we got the call saying, "Oh, could you please like make it clear on the website now that all the places have gone," because they were getting like some angry people calling them up, and because we'd publicised it obviously, and it had filled up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And it's an annual thing for anyone who's listening, and they're pretty sure they're going to be doing it again next year. But yeah, and I was thinking, I bet you there's loads. It was last night. I thought, I bet you there's loads of human first aid courses that there's just no takers for around the country, and it's just this attitude we have to animals. Everybody just loves them.
They do. Yeah. I mean, you only got Tony Telly on that night, haven't you? And there's animal programs on all the places, you know, and what they can do now with animals. I mean, when I first started, you know, a lot of animals unfortunately used to be put to sleep because they just couldn't repair their legs or backs or eyes or whatever. But now you see these super vets and everything else, what they do with them, it's amazing. In sort of, you know, 20, 30, 40 years, amazing what they can do with them. And if you've got an animal, you know, you want to do the best for it, and you know, you want to make sure you can give it the best sort of thing in life.
So if we just go back to your, because we started telling your story and then we kind of veered off, and I could talk about animals all day. So you started in the Victoria Hospital on May the 28th, 1974. Then you did the night duty. Then you were your little ambulance driver driving around. And then where did you go from there?
Yeah, then I was offered, obviously, to do some relief work as a manager at other centres. So I used to go off when on holiday or if they were poorly, you know, and look after them. And then eventually I was offered the Merton Hospital to run for about 18 months. And then I got married, so my wife moved in with me there as well. And then Bromsgrove came up, luckily. We were invited to come up and have a look at it. And if we would like it, then we were offered a post. So coming from London, which was like Brighton and everything, to the Midlands, you know, and to Bromsgrove at the time then, you know, it was the motorway was quite small. There was no street lights, you know. It was really quite a shock for us to come from the big city as such.
And you couldn't believe how cheap the houses were.
Yes. But I must admit, you know, the people up here have been amazing. They've taken to us so well as well, and the Blue Cross, you know, and actually setting the centre up, you know, in this area has been amazing, you know. And, you know, but 33 years I think we've been here this year, so, you know, we've done really well to establish it.
Strength to strength. I mean, you had a great response when you had to, I mean, we mentioned it downstairs, didn't we, about the rebuild, when you did the rebuild. That was a phenomenal amount of money you needed to raise.
That's right, yes.
And it happened.
Yeah, it's amazing, you know. And again, you know, when we had appeals throughout the years, people have been really, you know, generous to our appeals, which is absolutely fantastic, you know. We've got a Friends Day coming up a week after next for people who supported us over the years. You know, it's nice for them to come along and see where their money's gone, because that's important, that as a charity we show that we're spending the money on the animals, you know, and actually looking after them and finding them new homes.
Excellent. And how many animals do you rehouse a year?
Last year we did about 1,000 animals, which was mainly cats and dogs. We do rabbits now on what's called Home Direct as well, so we try and get rabbits into homes, save them coming into the centre. So about 1,000 animals. And this year already, what we're into sort of June, we're on target to do that again, which in one way, you know, is a bit sad that there's so many animals out there needing our help, even after all these years. And you know, we're neutering everything and vaccinating, microchipping and everything, but there's still unwanted animals out
there. You said that has improved things, the microchipping, you think?
Certainly, yes. Yeah, the numbers have gone down on obviously the numbers of strays. And if you go walk around any streets now, you very rarely see a stray dog, whereas, you know, 20, 30 years ago, there was dogs out. And people just used to, like, you know, latchkey kids you hear about, used to be latchkey dogs, didn't you? You'd let the dog out in the morning and just hope he'd turn up again at night. And people never knew what was going on.
Some people are like that with the kids. Well, they used to be. They don't even do that anymore, do they? I mean, I remember when I used to go out in the morning and come home at sunset. And nowadays, with my daughters, I'm like, oh, don't get too far away from stuff. That's it, you always yeah, got your
yeah.
items.
Yeah, but the microchipping has certainly made a big impact, you know, and we're really pleased about that as obviously as a charitable organisation.
Now, we must point out as well, because obviously it's law now, isn't it, to have your dog microchipped?
It is, yes. Law,
but it's not for cats, and I think you've spoke out about this before.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it, because cats are so sort of free, sort of roaming, but I think, you know, it'd be something that we will be sort of looking at, you know, maybe to campaign on, you know, to get cats microchipped. Because we get an awful lot of cats strays coming in, and cats can stray just round the corner sometimes, and people think, oh, it's a stray cat, pick it up, and not realise, you know, which is such a shame.
Now, I think what we'll do is as well, because we did go through a phase. I think we did it for a year. I think we did 52 weeks, or it wasn't even 50. It wasn't 52 weeks. Then I think it was like 48 weeks, and I think we managed to help rehouse 40 animals, and it was popular on Facebook. We did like a pet of the week. And I think we ought to bring that back. So if you can send us through one, I think we'll do that. I was just thinking about that.
Yeah, that's great. And again, that's changed as well over the years. You know, I mean, we never had Facebook and all these things and Twitter and everything years ago. And we used to rely on, obviously, newspapers quite a lot, obviously, for all our getting our stuff out there. You know, now Facebook is really good, and you can put something on and get a response there and then. So it's fantastic the way things have changed.
I mean, on the one hand, you've got that access everyone's got. I mean, I could get my phone out now and find myself a pet that I wanted, but obviously the tests are still stringent, aren't they? You bring them into the centre, and then they have a look at the dog or cat, and you make sure the two people are compatible.
Yeah.
And then obviously you've got the issue if they've already got pets at home, because you don't want them to bring them home and squabble and stuff.
No, we do assessments. And again, on that issue of sort of social media, it's obviously expanded in people, like, you know, getting animals off the websites and different places without knowing what the animal is, you know, and no history about it. And obviously puppy farms and all those sorts of things. So the Blue Cross will be campaigning, obviously, to get these sort of legalised, so they, you know, they can't actually sort of get an animal from, you know, these unreputable places.
Nobody should be buying animals online, should they? It's just ridiculous.
No, it's all too easy, isn't it, just to go on. You know, some of these places, you know, free to good homes, you know, and you don't know what you're getting. At least we're going to a reputable animal charity or animal rescue, you know the animal's been looked after, it's been health checked, it's been assessed, you know, as much as possible. And a lot of animals we do get in, people have said, you know, I've picked it up from, you know, certain places, you know, or gone to a puppy farm, you know, and found it. And obviously they take it home, they've no idea what they're getting, and so they end up with a problem dog.
I think the other thing as well, the other important thing, is obviously animals like ourselves have personalities. So you don't want an older person, say, with a dog that needs 50 million walks a day and he's like a Springer Spaniel that's going to be running around the house and causing havoc, in the same way that somebody who's livelier and stuff might not want a placid animal. They might want someone who, if they do a lot of hill walking and stuff, they might want to pick the dog to suit their lifestyle. Kind of thing.
That's where the team come in, you know, with their skills, you know, in matching the right animal to the right person, you know. And it proves it, because, you know, the calls we get from people who say, you know, I've got this dog from X, Y and Z, you know, and it's too big for us, you know, it's too boisterous, and we didn't realise it would be do this, it would do that. And, you know, we've had it over the years where we've had people ring up and say, oh, I don't like it because it's shedding hair, or, you know, it's digging up the garden. Or with cats, you know, it's bringing in mice and things. People don't sort of look at what this animal is going to bring, you know, and hopefully they'd have it for, you know, 10, 20 years. You know, it's a lifetime commitment.
My favourite story, to say, from the Blue Cross, is Ralph. Do you remember Ralph,
yes,
the Springer Spaniel?
Yeah.
Now, for those of you, you'd have to have a long memory. I obviously remember because I wrote the story. But it was, Ralph was a Springer Spaniel. Didn't really like the whole cage thing, as a Springer Spaniel wouldn't. Yourselves tried to find him some employment with, like, the police or something. And then Dublin, you ended up at Dublin Airport. Was it Dublin Airport or Fair?
Yes, I think it was Southern Ireland, yes. He'd gone through some training by a company up in Wales, so he was sniffing out, they'd send out drugs and illegal people as well, yeah. I think his first haul was like, you know, £750,000 or something.
That's right, his first job, first week in the job. Yeah. I think it was £1 million, actually. £1 million worth of cannabis hidden in a car. And that was his first job. Yeah. And he was Bromsgrove. He was from Bromsgrove.
Yeah, we had another one that actually went over to France, and they trained him to sniff the lorries. And they think find illegal immigrants in the lorries, you know, and he's found quite a few of those. So, You know, it's amazing what dogs will do. As you know, they sniff out cancers and all sorts, don't they, nowadays? It's,
oh, yeah, we've had that. We've had therapy dogs as well, stories about therapy dogs. And, of course, there was that one on Britain's Got Talent that got to the final one, the police dog that saved its owner. And
that's right, because it's coming into Finn's Law, isn't it? I think it's this week, isn't it?
That comes in this weekend. So yes. Is it tougher sentences for people?
That's right, yeah.
Because they cause unnecessary suffering to animals.
That's right, he's obviously saved his owner's life by putting himself in front of him and obviously the attacker and got stabbed and was lucky to survive. Yeah, it's amazing.
It's the same with like police horses as well, isn't it? There's like police horses they used to take poundings and stuff, and it's just not right, is it? They're innocent animals. But I suppose then we could look back at the war and the war horse scenario everything. And dogs have been traditionally used, and they are so loyal, aren't they?
They are.
I mean, cats, what's the phrase? It's a dog will sit on your lap because he loves you. A cat will sit on your lap because your lap is warmest. That sums it up.
I mean, a cat will just look at you as you walk in the door and sort of go back to sleep, whereas the dog is there, pleased to see you, wants to make a fuss over you, wants to go out for a walk,
The other thing that cats do, which I think is amazing, and I don't know if you found this, if you've got a cat and two people come round to your house, they will go to the one who doesn't like the cats.
Yeah, it's weird.
And they'll
just
seem to go, I'm going to convince you that we're all right.
And you get those two camps, don't you? You get the dog camps and the cat people camps.
I'm more of a cat person than a dog person.
But I think it's, whatever pet you have, as long as you look after it, they give you years of love and affection and that's the main thing about it.
There are so many out there.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, my sister, who volunteers with yourselves on a Friday, she had a chinchilla, she's had rabbits, hamsters, gerbils, goldfish. She's got them African land snails as well.
Yeah.
It's all crazy. It's volunteer week as well. We need to mention that.
That's right,
we've
got a great
week from yourselves this week, which we're hopefully going to get in. It's about the volunteers. Obviously, without volunteers, your Blue Cross wouldn't exist, really.
That's right. When I'm looking back over the last 45 years, when we first started up here, it was just me and my wife, and after about a year, we managed to get one member of staff and progress. We had no volunteers. Now we've got about 150 core volunteers on our books, which is amazing. They'll do anything from, doing with the animals. We have van drivers, people who do reception, people who are doing sort of maintenance work around the site, everywhere. As we say, a volunteer can be an hour a week, an hour a day, however long you want to do. We're grateful for all volunteers.
I think the thing is with these kind of things and with anything really, it's better to have a lot of people doing a little than a little people doing a lot.
That's it, As we say, though we're an animal charity, you don't necessarily have to be with the animals. We've got people who come in and say who want to do driving, taking animals from one place to the other or collecting things for us, and it all helps. All helps the centre and all helps the animals. It's amazing. And the more volunteers we can get, the better. So check out our website, follow the links on there for the roles we've got live.
So people can join. They can do that this weekend in National Volunteers Week. If you've always thought about working with animals and you love animals, then that's going to be the perfect voluntary role for you. So get onto the Blue Cross. You can just search for Bromsgrove Blue Cross on Facebook, or Google it.
Or bluecross.org.uk. Mm. Look on there. Yes, as I say, it's different roles, And if you, as I say, if you don't want to work with dogs, you work with the cats and vice versa. And some people do half a day in the dogs, half a day in the cats. And, we've had some volunteers there have been there sort of 10, 15 years, which is absolutely amazing, giving all that time up to us.
So that's good there. I need to ask you this about what's been your quirkiest thing to happen to you while you were there's probably loads, isn't there?
There's one that always sticks to mind was when I was doing ambulance driving. I used to go to this block of flats and used to go up to this smelly, horrible lift. And it was only like a two-person lift, so I used to go up and collect the dog and take it down and back to the hospital, back home again. Did this probably once a month for a long time, and got in the lift one day to take the dog back to the owner. Got into the bottom floor, pushed her number, got about halfway and stopped. I thought, it's typical. So pushed the button and the bell was ringing and ringing and ringing. So stuck in this lift, halfway between about floor 5 and 6. Eventually someone shouted, we've called the fire brigade. So about 20 minutes later, half an hour later, fire brigade shouted down and said, we're going to winch you up. So take it, don't worry, it'll take a little while to winch you up. So we'll get you up as soon as we can. They started to winch up. Every so often, the doors would open, in between floors, and occasionally at a floor. So I looked at the dog and sipping me. I said to the dog, next time the doors open, I said, we're going to make a run for it and get out of here. I said, because, it's getting really quite claustrophobic in here. Yeah. So it was about 10, I think it was. The doors opened, so I quickly rushed out and grabbed the dog, and we got out. So we walked up to the stairs, and time we got to the top of the stairs to where the firemen were, they got the finding the lift to the top. So they opened the doors and they all looked inside, and there's obviously nobody in there. So I turned up behind them and said, excuse me, I said, I'm the person that's stuck in the lift, but I couldn't be bothered to wait for you. So,
how long were you in there?
I was in there probably about an hour or so. And it was you know, it was a real two-person lift. It was so there's no windows.
Taking the dog and a lot to drink.
No, I was worried about him as well, panting away.
Imagine that in a confined restaurant.
Yeah. So that was my sort of claim to fame as a fireman.
So that was good. So I bet that's the thing as well, isn't it? You get to meet the owners as well,
and
some of them are quite quirky as well.
Yeah, we used to have a lady who lived over in Clapham in London, and she'd emigrated from Australia. And so she had loads of cats, and she had a cat for every 1,000 miles between here and Australia, which I think was like, was it 20 cats or something? And every time, sadly, one died, she'd go and get another cat. And we said to her, you can't keep having all these cats. But she did. She looked after them so well, but, you know, she wanted one for every 1,000 miles between here and Australia.
That's incredible, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So it's amazing. I did get to meet the Queen as well, which is quite a thing, when she came to Victoria for the opening of the hospital after 100 years. So in 1997, so I got all suited and booted and met her, which was really nice. And she had a little chat to us all in a room. So
she's a big animal lover, isn't she?
She is, her corgis and everything else. Yeah.
Well, I thought that's what you were going to say. She's called you. Neil, come over here quick. The corgi's not off his food.
That'd be a nice call, wouldn't it? Yeah. But no, it's been exciting 45 years, and you know, obviously, you know, I've probably got another 5 or 6 years before I retire, but I want to make sure that those are, you know, are good years and helping as many animals as I can.
You must have helped thousands, mustn't you, surely?
Probably, yes. It's hard to think about it. But
the, I mean, the thing is what you've done, your legacy, you've built this, obviously, the work you did earlier in the South, and then you've come up here, and it's on a good footing, isn't it, the Blue Cross? It's a strong footing.
Yeah.
It's come so far since its opening.
Yeah, we're well established in the Midlands now. And I think it's one of those things, you know, people say, oh, you're well known. And when you work in the organisation, you don't really know. But when we do our open day, which is this year, is in August, you know, we get 3,000 or 4,000 people turn up, you know, and people come back, you know, and say, oh, I had this dog from you sort of 10 years ago, or suddenly, you know, this animal, you know, has died, you know, I need another pet, you know. And people sort of recognise us and remember us. And that's amazing, you know, and hopefully, you know, we'll carry on. Yeah, long after I've gone.
And you have so many brilliant events, like you've got your fortnightly car boot sales. We had the sponsored dog walk.
That's right.
The pause for teas. People can organise their tea parties at the moment.
That's right. People can organise tea party throughout the year anytime they want to. Yeah. And then August 31st, we've got a big fete coming up as well. So, which is really good. And we've got a great volunteer. Back to volunteers again. We've got a great lot of volunteers that go out every weekend doing fundraising for us as well. Again, because, you know, we need the money to come in from.
So that's another volunteer role.
Yeah, they're out at events.
How much does it cost to run the say the Bromsgrove one, do you know?
Last year's budget was about 600,000, and obviously I'm responsible for the budget as well, which again is a bit of a, you know, hard one. But we do get help from sort of companies, you know, with sponsorship of food and various things and discounts for drugs. But, you know, our sort of drug bill can be sort of £4,000 a month or something, you know, for the animals, you know, which again, you know, is hard for us, but, you know, we have to manage on that.
What I was going to say as well, because I've just written a story just this minute, just before I came up here, about West Midlands Ambulance Service are investing, I think it's £40 million in 300 new ambulances. Now, West Midlands Ambulance Service are the most outstanding ambulance service in the country. They're the only one with the outstanding rating, and all their ambulances, apparently, they never have an ambulance longer than 5 years. And because obviously they don't want it to break down. And also, these ones are going to be the most high-tech ambulances in the world, right? So that's good for West Midlands, for us. So have you seen many changes in the Blue Cross ambulance? Has that gone the same? I mean, I presume it was just a van back in the day.
Yeah, it was a van, yeah. I mean, obviously now they're all equipped with obviously, they've got stretchers and things and all the equipment you need to help the animals through London, you know. Obviously at the centre at Bromsgrove, you know, our ambulances are just geared up for collecting animals and taking animals out and that sort of thing. But it's changed quite a lot, yeah. And obviously, you know, money's tight for all charities, and, you know, we don't receive any government aid at all. So ours has to come from the members of the public, legacies and that sort of thing, you know.
Because you don't really get a 999 service for pets, do you? You have to drive them yourself, really. You can't call them.
Yeah,
it's not
yeah.
an NHS for pets.
No, no, it's not. No, no. Obviously, we, you know, we've got hospitals in London, and there's obviously like the PDSA and the RSPCA have hospitals to help, but there isn't the sort of coverage as there is for, you know, your human.
How
people.
Are you with the other animal charities? Is there a kind of rivalry there? Or I've always wondered that.
No, rivalry. No, we'll get on together, and we're all there to help the animals. Yeah. You know, and as we say, you know, it's a sad fact that we're still, you know, having so many charities out there that are taking these animals in. You know, it's not like just one charity within sort of 100 miles. You know,
it's across the board. We've got there's a hospital in Frankley, isn't there?
Yes,
the RSPCA,
yeah. And obviously around here, you know, you've got all the other charities as well, and you know, we're still taking the animals in, which is a shame, and it makes you wonder where they're coming from as well, because we're all neutering them, and obviously, you know, so where they're coming from.
The PDSA as well, which kind of help with fees, don't they, and things.
Yeah.
So I suppose it's a case of really all working together to ensure that every animal is given the best possible welfare.
You know, we were talking earlier about, obviously, you know, sort of dogs sniffing out people and what have you, and obviously a lot of dogs now are also getting smuggled into the country as well, you know, Dover, they're always finding puppies from Romania and other countries like that, so that's a big areas now, you know, that are coming over, and obviously we no idea what they've got, you know, and obviously rabies is always a concern. You know, we've been obviously years and years without it, so there's always that concern.
Actually got a charity in Droitwich, I think it is, that rescue Romanian street dogs and do it all properly. They rehouse them in
It's in, done properly, it's fine, but these people obviously bringing back a lorries, you know, and it's,
you need sniffer dogs to sniff out the dogs,
yeah, it's terrible, isn't it, you know, not good.
So we'll just end with, I need to ask you, where do you go from here then? What's next for the Blue Cross? Because we've had the rebuild, we've had a nice improved ambulance, we've had all these kind of things. Obviously, how many volunteers have you got, by the way?
About 150 core volunteers at the centre, as a charity, we do a lot of campaigning with the government. We have a department that deals with that, obviously looking at legislation, obviously the Dangerous Dog Act and all those sorts of things, obviously all the time. And we started to open the last couple of years, sort of, we're hoping the vice unions. There's one in Sheffield and Manchester. So they're centres that are actually on the high street. They have a few sort of rooms in there. The dogs will be taken at night to a kennel and then brought back in the morning. So it's more of that on the high street presence. It's a bit easier to run. It's obviously less cost than having a huge centre like ours on sort of 9 acres. And it's getting to those areas that are obviously deprived and need our help as well. So that's probably one of the ways forward we're going.
Yeah. So there's always something in the pipeline, isn't there?
There is,
Because there was the new kennels and then the new cattery, wasn't
That's
there?
Right, yes, yeah.
And then it was, I can't remember all the stories I've written about the Blue Cross. It's amazing. I think like yourself, though, as well, because if somebody gave me some stories, read some stories out that I'd written, even about the Blue Cross or whatever, they'd ask me to name the year, and I bet it would be further back than I thought it would be.
It is,
you always go,
That
was about 2015, wasn't it? And then you look, it's like 2007.
I know, I've got a folder at my office, obviously, of all the old sort of press cuttings and that, and you look at it and you think, you know, your hairstyle changes and clothes change and everything else. It's quite weird, you know, looking back, you know.
But we still need a Santa hat at Christmas.
We still need a Santa hat at Christmas,
They don't change much. Well, thanks for joining us. If people want to find out about the Blue Cross, it's you can go to the Blue Cross, Bromsgrove Blue Cross Facebook page or bluecross.org.uk. And I think it's /Bromsgrove.
It is, yeah.
You specifically want the Bromsgrove one. So, but all these will be on the website. We've got a nice feature going in this week about Neil and his 45 years. And I think we should say congratulations, really.
Because
without you, I don't think Bromsgrove, it's safe to say that Bromsgrove Blue Cross wouldn't have been such a success with your... You're very passionate, and that's what you need in a role like that, isn't it?
Yeah, I've enjoyed it, and so I've had loads of support from the charity and obviously friends and family. And obviously, I've got a very supportive wife to put up with me for obviously that, because it is a 24-hour job as well, and living on site. So, yeah, it does obviously impact on your social life as well.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to be married to somebody who wasn't that keen on anymore,
no.
would you? No. Okay, well, we'll catch up with Neil in the future sometime. Good luck, and I hope everything goes well.
Thank you, Trish.
Right, let's have a look at some other news now. We've got some, not much has come in this week so far, because this is the thing with the Wednesday. It's kind of like we're still gearing up for those big stories, and we don't want to say anything if these stories don't come off. We've had probably our quirkiest story of the week, although there is a serious element to it as well. A group of drama students sparked a security alert in Longbridge Town Centre on Saturday, which led to the police sending an armed response unit out. And they were basically filming scenes with water pistols. Somebody reported to the police that there was guns on the streets. They sent an armed police unit out, And yeah, words were had, and they were just, they inspected the guns. But I think it was one of them where you could clearly see they were like luminous water pistols. I don't think that the call should be made. But then again, you've got to look at the other side of it. If somebody thinks, oh, I don't think they're real guns, and doesn't call the police and they are real guns, then I think you could have it the other way, couldn't you? So you can't have it both ways. So Scott Cartwright from Starlight Theatre apologised for the misunderstanding to both the police and the person who reported it. He said if we'd known who to talk to or let the right authorities know, we would have made the call. The guns cost us £1 each, but we didn't actually think they'd cause any alarm. The police can. So we had put the question to the police, should people inform you if they're doing such scenes like with swords or guns or whatever on the streets? Then the police can be contacted by live chat. It's west-midlands.police.uk because it's Longbridge. Obviously West Mercia will have a similar one, westmercia.police.uk, and you can call 101, I suppose, just let them know, and then that'll avoid, although there could be technically, couldn't there? There could be a real arm siege and a film going on in the first place. That's just occurred to me, so that would be
I've got a story if you're interested about.
Oh, go on.
We were coming back from America with the kids, and we bought some Nerf guns over there, and we said to the kids, we probably won't get them through customs, it was obviously after 9/11, so he said, but we'll take them and we'll declare them. So we got to the checking point, and the chap said, in it, declare, and said, yes, we've got these Nerf guns in there. So he took them out, and unbeknown to us, one of the kids had left one of them loaded. So they put it in the air and shot it, not realising it. And then they made that noise and the Nerf thing spat out. And everyone around us all hit the floor. And we were standing there wondering what the hell was going on. But it's a security scare at the Houston airport.
So they're well drilled as well to hit the floor. I'd have just ran.
Yes.
The noise is coming from that way. I'm going to go that way.
Yeah. They just say they confiscated the guns anyway, so... Didn't let us carry them through.
No. But I think it is quite shocking if you're in the UK and you actually see a gun.
Yes.
I mean, we came under fire from a spoof police Twitter feed once because somebody contacted us and they said they'd actually they'd seen an armed police officer on the streets of Bromsgrove and they were just concerned. So we just did a little story in case other people were concerned, and we set the record straight. We weren't criticising the police. We're big backers of the police and the good job they do. And then we did it, and it was just turned out that it was an armed copper who'd gone for his lunch, and he has to stay tooled up in case the call comes when he's in Asda or wherever, all the supermarkets are available. I think this one was Asda. And, and we got slated on Twitter saying, any Bromsgrove Standard journalist spotted with a pen and paper in the town centre causing alarm. And it was this ridiculous article, and I was just, it got us a lot of web hits. That was the upside. but they accused us of doing clickbait and stuff, and I was just thinking, no, we were just simply doing that. But it is quite shocking, I think, in the UK if you do see a real gun.
Yeah, it's
when you go abroad, it's the first thing you notice, isn't it? They go, oh my God, the police carry guns, because you just forget how they don't really carry them over here. We've got the countdown to this year's Bromsgrove Beer and Cider Festival. The logo is actually, it's got a moon and an astronaut on. It's marking Neil Armstrong, another Neil, we've got two Neils today, Neil Armstrong's 50th anniversary of the moon landing. It's a giant leap for Bromsgrove. It runs between Thursday, June the 27th and Saturday, June the 29th at the Bromsgrove Rugby Club. There are 144 beers available and more than 60 ciders and perries. Now, I go every year for my birthday celebration, and this year, June the 27th, the 30th that I normally go on, is actually my birthday, so that's going to be good, isn't it? So, we hope to see you there. Go along and support it. Admission, £10, includes a deposit for a commemorative glass and £5 worth of beer tokens, and obviously a bit more for camera members. So there's a story on the website there for that. And talking of food and drink, next week it's the Droitwich Spa Food and Drink Festival. It's back once again in the Lido Park, always well attended. It's 10 till 5 on 10, it starts at 10 on the Saturday morning, sorry, and then it goes through till 9 p.m. on Saturday evening. Live entertainment, and then 10 till 5 on the Sunday. There's 100 food and drink stalls featuring a variety of things, including local producers like award-winning Churchfield's ice cream, Croom Cuisine cheeses. There's also loads of bands on, Come Together, Chloe Chadwick, the Coventry Brass Band and Jazz Alchemy, and there's also the live food roadshow. And as well, I don't think this has been here before, but there's a chili eating competition. Do you like your spices?
Not that hot, no.
I know, you say some of them, don't you? You can actually hallucinate if you have the wrong chili, which probably isn't all the wrong chili.
The Blue Cross have got a stall there as well.
You got a stall there as well?
Yes, we'll be there as well.
Because it must be a busy season coming up for you, because obviously the carnival's around the corner.
That's right,
and you've got Droitwich. How far do you go when you take your stalls?
Anywhere, really, about sort of 10, 15 miles.
Because I suppose with the Blue Cross, it's not really... Where's the next nearest one?
From here, we go down south. It's probably Lugnor and Burford. And then north, we've got Thirsk, really, Yorkshire, and then Sheffield and Manchester. So, yeah.
It's quite a big area, isn't it?
A big area, yeah. Yeah, so come along and see us at the festival.
So go and see Neil and the... will you be there or just the team?
Just the team. I'll be sampling the food, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He'll be there. He'll be there eating chilies. That's the Droitwich Spa Food and Drink Festival. And there's also, as well, something that we really love with the Droitwich Food and Drink Festival is obviously there's going to be a little bit of a salt day on the Sunday, because Droitwich obviously relaunched its salts a couple of years ago, and it's gone from strength to strength. Because what's happened is a lot of chefs have tried this salt and they say it's amazing, because the sea salt has obviously, unfortunately, become tainted with plastic because of... obviously all the environmental issues. But when they drilled down in the Droitwich salts, they found after they'd, it's a bit like a beer, I suppose, and when they poured a bit off afterwards, it was clear. And it was actually, they went and had it tested, and it was perfectly fine to consume when they got the test back from the labs. So, and then since then, it's gone from strength to strength. We had salted butter, salted caramel, salted fudge, everything, and it's the real thing of the talking point of the moment. Droitwich salt as well, the brine under Droitwich Spa is 10 times saltier than the sea.
Really?
And hopefully we'll be seeing the brine baths come back at some point, but that's for another day. Thank you so much. That's about all we've got for the news at the moment. We will have much more in the paper and on the website. Remember, we do daily web updates. But right now, Claire is up with all the entertainments and what you can be doing if you're out and about in Bromsgrove and Droitwich in the next few days.
For all the things to do and see this week, it's Claire Bullivant with this week's What's On Guide.
Thanks, Tristan. Once again, we've got some fun things happening this weekend in town. My name is Claire Bullivant at the Bromsgrove and Droitwich Standards, and these are my top picks of things to see and do this week in the Bromsgrove and Droitwich areas. Starting off on Friday, the 7th of June, it's the Bob Dylan story at the Artrix. This is the stunning and definitive live concert celebration of one of rock music's greatest icons. Join Bob and the band on a nostalgic trip through and beyond 1960s America as hits including Like a Rolling Stone, Mr. Tambourine Man, Blowing in the Wind, Knocking on Heaven's Door, The Times They Are Changing, and many more are captured to perfection. He did so many great songs, didn't he? It's going to be a great show. Get your tickets from the box office 01527 577330. We've also got some other live music happening about town. On Friday night, the Ron Jeremy Band will be performing at the Hot Pole Inn in Bromsgrove. These guys need no introduction. They're one of the best indie rock covers bands in the area and always guaranteed to be a lively night out. We love it at the Hot Pole Inn too. There's also a soul and Motown night going down on Friday evening at Catskill Working Men's Club. And we just heard that the Heron Brothers will be performing at Number 3A in Aston Fields. The Heron Brothers are Paul and Stephen Heron, a folk indie pop songwriting duo from Derby who are truly brilliant. I really do recommend you check them out. Moving on to Saturday the 8th of June, there's going to be a comedy festival going on at the Gardener's Arms all day in Droitwich, 11 a.m. until 10:30 p.m. There's also an open garden for NGS happening at Hanbury Hall and Gardens on Saturday, and also on Sunday actually there, 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. on both days. On Saturday evening, the Summer of Love will be coming to the Artrix. This show is an explosion of flowers, psychedelia, freedom, peace and love, and of course, timeless timeless music that inspired a generation. All the hits from one of music's most influential eras, California Dreaming, San Francisco, Happy Together, Brown Eyed Girls. I should have lived in this era, as I truly love this music. It's going to be an incredible evening out. There's also going to be a original 1960s film footage, incredible vocalists, and a world-class live band there. If you need more details, thesummerofloveshow for all the details and tickets on that, or just check out the Artrix's website. Also on Saturday night, some great live music across the area for you. The Quo will be performing at the Hot Pole Inn in Bromsgrove. Don't think it's the real Quo, but they're a great tribute band and they'll definitely give you a great night there. Emily Badger, she's also putting on a show at the Rubri Social Club. I haven't actually seen Emily perform before, but I keep reading great reviews about her. So if you go, let us know, because it really helps us out so we can review it for next time. But we do hope to come and see you soon, Emily. Mute the Flute, they're going to be on at the Dog and Pheasant in Bromsgrove. And everyone's favourite Witcher, they'll be bringing down the house at the Gardener's Arms in Droitwich on Saturday evening too. Then moving on to Sunday the 9th of June, just a couple of things for you. It's Bloodwise Bromsgrove's Forget Me Not Walk at the Ginny Ring Craft Centre in Hanbury, 10 a.m. start there. Do try and get involved with that. There's also going to be Bandstand Music in the Park at Sanders Park between 2:30 p.m. and 4:30 p.m. on Sunday. So bring a deck chair or take a stroll around the park and listen to the live music there. And then in the evening on Sunday, Test Your Brains at the Quiz Night at the Gardener's Arms in Droitwich, 8 p.m. start there. And that concludes our roundup of events to see and do this weekend in town. If you have an event that you'd like included, please do get in touch with us. You can email us your event details or give us a call and we'll help you publicise it to all the readers of the Bromsgrove and Droitwich Standards and listeners of this podcast. And we'll also pop you on our social media channels. Thanks so much for listening and have a great week.
Thank you, Claire. That's great. Plenty to do there. Thanks also to Neil, who's joined us from the Blue Cross. And congratulations to him on his 45 years with the charity. Remember, you can get weekly updates. You can get the paper weekly on a Friday. And you can get daily updates at bromsgrovestandard.co.uk, droitwichstandard.co.uk. We'd love you to get in touch if you want to speak about anything that you've heard on this podcast, anything in the paper, or anything on our website. And remember, you can follow us and join in the conversation on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. Just search for Bromsgrove Standard or Droitwich Standard and we'd love to see you there. So in the meantime, all that's left to say is have a great week and we'll be back at the same time next week.